as a cab driver, I think.
In the Jacksonites area, in front of the popular Nepali Bhim Cafe, community activists set up tables full of census forms and giveaways like baseball caps to attract people. Volunteers are helping some Nepalis fill out the census forms. South Asian organizations like Chhaya, Adhikar and others have been educating the community about the census. Many Nepali community members and organizations have also formed a body called the Nepali Complete Count Committee to encourage Nepalis to promptly fill out the forms. The outreach includes knocking on doors and meeting people in shopping areas to remind them about the census. Flyers are being distributed in Nepali shops and places of worship. The federal government also placed census advertisements in Nepali newspapers and on TV. Still, there are some Nepalis who are reluctant to give away personal information. Seema Agnani is the executive director of Chhaya, an organization that helps South Asian communities on housing issues.
It's very hard for us to advocate for community needs. If we can't say, look, this data shows we have this many people living here, and many of them are living in these conditions, we need the city to invest in improving housing. We can't make those arguments without this data. And so for the last 10 years, we've been struggling because the data didn't reflect what was true.
There have also been complaints from community organizations that the Census Bureau did not do enough to encourage immigrants' participation. Chuck Mohan is a Census Bureau representative who works with South Asian communities in New York City. He admits the outreach programs could have been much effective.
The advertising campaign was not coordinated properly, and certain aspects of the campaign should have been done much earlier so that we can inoculate the communities, give them time to understand why it is important.
As of the second week of April, around 47% of households have returned the forms in the Queens area. Salim Rizvi, FSRN, New York City.
And before we go today, many are discussing the expected resignation of Labour leader Andy Stern. An official announcement may come later this week. To learn more, go to our website where you'll find a link to an interview with columnist Bill Fletcher, a longtime Labour activist and writer. Thanks to Mitch Jezerich, host of Pacifica Radio's Letters to Washington. For today's web special on Stern's probable resignation, visit FSRN.org. And that's today's show. Thanks for listening. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina.
9 non-commercial radio in New York. WBAI is the place to turn to.
Peace. Oh my God. Yeah, my mother got a sleeping suicide singing. Oh my God. Yeah, my mother got a sleeping genocide singing. Oh my God. My mother got a sleeping suicide scene. Oh my God.
Oh my God. It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to WBAI New York. It's time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. Shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bundle it, no.
And good enjoy. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. And we're joined tonight by Mike.
Hi.
Jim.
Hello.
And Rob T. Firefly in the studio.
Good evening.
Voltaire is on his way up here, speeding in a yellow limousine, I believe. And yes, Bernie S. joins us on the phone from Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia, the home of flash mobs.
Yes, indeed. Just a special aside between those of us in the room and those of us listening on the radio right now. Red Hack is running late. He's been running late consistently, and the problem is I'm not going to be here next week, and he's filling in. So bear with me here. I'm basically going to announce when he comes in that the show has been moved to 6 p.m. next week. I'm doing that for our sake. That way he'll be here on time. Actually, he'll be here a little bit late. He'll be here at 6:15 or something. And that way, as long as everybody keeps this to themselves, the listeners and people in the room, actually the show is staying where it is at 7 p.m. I'm just going to say that when he comes in the room, that the show is moving to 6 p.m. Just let's all keep a straight face. And yeah, all right. What choice do I have?
I think the secret's safe.
All right, good. Why? Because nobody's listening?
Well, I think we just have a very trustworthy audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We actually do. A very dedicated audience as well, and one that we've valued over the years. So I want to thank you for bearing with us. Okay, all kinds of fun things happening. Bernie, Nauticon is coming up this weekend, right?
Yes, I'm hitting the road tomorrow, picking up our friend Ed Piskor in Pittsburgh. We're going to stop by the hackerspace in Pittsburgh called Hack Pittsburgh, and then we're going to head to Cleveland for Nauticon.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. So, actually, leaving on Thursday. Well, I think it begins on Thursday, doesn't it?
Well, Thursday, late Thursday night. So we'll get there in time.
Okay, I'm heading out to Eastern Europe next week for the next three shows. I'll be somewhere in the former Yugoslavia. So, any listeners out there, please write oth@2600.com. Maybe we can meet up, see your hacker spaces, or just your cities, or parts of the various republics there. I found out something interesting that I'm heading in via Germany and Austria, and hitting every single one of the republics, including Kosovo, and also Albania and Italy. This trip, I'm hitting more countries than I hit when I went all around the world. Think about that. If you add up the countries, I went England, Holland, Germany, Poland, Belarus, Russia, Mongolia, China, Japan, United States again. And here, all the former Yugoslav republics and those other countries I mentioned, it's more. Isn't that amazing?
So you're going to visit FIROM.
Yeah, okay. As long as you brought that up, yes. We're going to get to the bottom of that controversy. The country being the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. And apparently, if you call it Macedonia, people in Greece get very angry at you because they have a Macedonia, too, that's older or has more rights to the name or something like that. So they insist on you calling it FIROM, former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. But, you know, to me, it seems like you're still calling it Macedonia that way. You know, it's the former Yugoslav Republic of what? You know, Macedonia. So it just seems like they should come up with a different name for it. And I'll try to get to the bottom of that.
Well, just for politeness's sake, call it whatever the people around you are calling it.
Oh, you know, that's the other thing. If you go to Google Maps, and this is a lot of fun, if you go to Google Maps and you look at a map of the world, you'll see that they actually spell out the country not only in the word that it's spelled out, but in the alphabet that it's spelled out. So Russia will be written in Cyrillic, but countries like Spain is España. Is that how you pronounce
España.
It? España. Why don't we do that? Why don't we call the countries the names that that their own people call them?
They call us Estados Unidos.
Well, if we all agree to just call ourselves what the country calls itself officially, I think we'd get along a lot better. And I'd like to get a map that has all the countries written in the alphabet and language of the people there.
What about countries where there's a brutal argument over what language to use or over what script to write?
You could put a big slash through that or something. I don't know. There's all kinds of possibilities, but it's got to be better than the system we have now.
Really. India's got 12 languages. It would take up the whole country just to write the name.
Well, yeah, okay. That's what's going to be happening next week. And actually, when I get back in mid-May, I'm heading straight to Dayton, right, Bernie?
Yes. What, you're going straight to Dayton from Kosovo?
Well, it's kind of funny because the Dayton Accord was signed.
That's right.
Pretty much. So everybody there is going to know where Dayton is. I don't know if people here are going to know where Dayton is, but when I go over to former Yugoslavia and mention Dayton, I'll either, you know, have a boulder hurled at me or a firm handshake, depending on how they thought that worked out. But yeah, it wasn't planned that way. Just a big coincidence.
Very interesting.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about this last week. We had Julian Assange on here last week from WikiLeaks, and that was quite an interesting show.
Yes, this the first time that we and Stephen Colbert have ever had the same guest?
Well, I was going to mention that. We scooped Colbert Report yet again with another one of our guests. He was on, what, 2 days ago? Yesterday?
Something like that.
Yeah.
The other day, I think.
Okay. And, yeah, tune to Off the Hook. You'll get the interesting people before the mainstream finds them.
I got to say, it was very interesting watching that Colbert interview, because even Colbert, like, in character, was sort of dropping the shtick and actually doing something like a straight interview, his Colbert character.
What do you mean?
Well,
what do you mean character?
You know, like how I'm doing my character right now, and I'm really nothing like this in real life.
Oh yeah. That's an understatement. It really is. Boy, when that microphone's off, look out. Okay, so we did that last week, and it's fascinating finding out all of that. And we hope to have him back. We hope to have him at Hope, and other things like that. But we didn't get to talk about what we did for April Fools, which is something I really wanted to focus on, because you know, we sort of went to a bit of trouble, and we kind of dropped a hint about it. It was the Thursday after the show previous to last week's. So what happened was, if you went to the main 2600 page on April 1st, you had this big QR code taking up the entire page. Anybody know what a QR code is? Mike, yes, go ahead.
It's a big block of black and white little blocks that is a two-dimensional barcode.
Well, that's one way of saying it. Yeah, I guess. A barcode. One of those modern-looking barcodes, I guess. Where do you see it in other places?
You see it on UPS and FedEx packages, things like that.
True. Yes, you do. You don't see it on products so much.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not so much. Sometimes some manufacturers use them if they want to store more individual data about the lot or something, but they don't use it at the supermarket.
Now, you can store, I think, up to 200 characters on these things, which is a lot. I mean, considering it's just, as you say, this black and white image.
Although the one you had was, like, really big.
Well, we sized it to fit. That's a printing tool.
Wouldn't fit on my screen.
I'm not going to comment on your screen. But basically, how would you read something like that? If you come across a QR code, how would you possibly translate that? Because people were banging their heads against walls trying to figure out what our site was up to, because that's all it had on it when you went to 2600.com that day.
A lot of mobile phones, a lot of smartphones, as they're called, have applications you can download that read them. You can also buy a dedicated scanner, but that would be a bit much just to scan one code.
They've had these in Japan for years. In fact, there's graffiti stickers that people put up on walls, and you take pictures with your cell phone over there, and you get the message, whatever the message is. But in any event, if you figured out how to do that, you got a message saying, congratulations, you've decoded the message. If you feel you're capable of something greater, send us an email at phase1@2600.com along with a unique word in the body of your message that we'll ask you for later if you make it that far. And we put this up in the evening. We put it right after the show, actually, on March 31st. And we started getting emails almost immediately from people sending us unique words to Phase 1. Now, what happened when you mailed Phase 1, there was an autoresponder that mailed you back and said, congratulations, you have successfully sent and received an email from us. It may sound as if we're mocking you, but we're really not. This actually could be a very significant moment in your life, if, in fact, you turn out to be a candidate. We suggest you keep this communication in a safe place. You very well could be needing it. Oh, yes. Now go and find the secret message in the Hope page. Now, there's a little clue there in that last sentence. It wasn't go and find the secret message on the Hope page. It was go and find the secret message in the Hope page. And, Mike, what would you do in a situation like that?
I would visit hope.net.
Yeah, okay, good.
And then I would inspect it carefully, and if I didn't see anything, I'd open up the source.
That's, yes. You get inside the page by looking at the source. On your browser, you'll see a little thing that says View Source, and then you look in the source, and you'll find the message contained in there someplace. Congratulations, you have just discovered the secret message. Three congratulations already. Please call +1-801-436-7442. Do not speak. Listen.
Can we call it now? Will it still work?
You know what? Yeah, let's do that. How do we get a line here? Done this a million times. We have a dial tone? Okay. We're going to call that number. what did I say it was? 436-7442. And I need the secret code, which I think I remember. And let's hear what happens.
The phone number you have just called is actually spelling the name of a place. Spell the capital of the name of that place backwards and add a com. See you there.
Oh, how mysterious and strange. Isn't it?
Sure.
What could that person mean? It's the name of a
place.
What do you
mean, that person?
It's the name of that. It's the name of a place. And we're recording. We're recording.
Oh, okay.
We have the side benefit of this is that we have hundreds of recordings of people who have said God knows what. We haven't listened to them yet, and I don't know how long he can talk for. I guess we'll find out. Yes, it's the name of a place. And I don't know how you would spell out the name of a place on the telephone dial. Do you have a method of doing that? Has anybody ever tried that? Sending messages with phone characters? You know, two is ABC, three is DEF. Bernie, you've done it?
Yeah, I've done it. There's systems that allow you to send messages that way, but it's really awkward.
It is. You know, back before the days of cell phones and right at the beginning of the beeper era, I used to send text messages to people in code. For instance, hi there would be 44. Because H and I are both on the 4 key, and then there would be 84373. And then you'd have to figure it out. You'd have to think in your head what letters go with the touch tone and spell out the message that way and then respond to it in kind. So that was a bit of fun. So people had to do that here. And after tearing their heads apart for a little while, eventually a bunch of people got it, and they realized that the phone number spelled out Georgia. It's pretty cool that we got 1801 Georgia, don't you think?
Yeah.
Is it in Georgia?
What do you mean, it's in Georgia? No, I don't know where it is. It's just it's a Google Voice number.
Well, it's 801. It's got to
be
somewhere.
It could be orbiting the moon for all I know. Nobody knows how those people work. But it goes someplace, and that message gets recorded. And yes, 1801 Georgia. So according to the message that person told us, it's the name of a place, indeed. We must spell the name of the capital backwards. How do you spell it backwards? First of all, do we know the name of the capital?
No, nobody
knows?
You say,
what?
You're talking about Georgia, the country, or Georgia, the state?
Oh, you raise an interesting point, Bernie. There are two Georgias. There's a Georgia, the state, and there's a Georgia, the country. How many places like that exist? Wow, the fact that we got that phone number is simply stupendous. So, yeah, a lot of false leads. You know, in retrospect, we didn't get the website Atlanta.com backwards, which was available. We should have done that. It would have been a nice little false lead. But no, in fact, it is the country. And who knows the capital of Georgia, the country? Anybody?
Tbilisi or something?
Tbilisi, I think, is what you're trying to say. Yes. Right. And even if you know that, spelling it is very difficult. But it's spelled Tbilisi. So, of course, backwards, that's ISILIBT.com. So if you went to that website, you basically...
Goodbye.
Oh, sorry. Google Voice just said goodbye to us. Okay. Thank you. I guess we have a nice long message there. You went to isilbit.com. You basically got the entire United Nations Declaration of Human Rights displayed in front of you with the preface in front of it, read every word. And if you read every word, eventually you'd get to the section of it that said Article 26. And Article 26, Item 4, stated, find the secret message in this text and follow it to the letter.
What does the real declaration say in that place?
There is no Section 4 in Article 26.
Well,
there's only three.
What are 1, 2, and 3?
I don't have it in front of me. It's a long text. This is our way of getting people to read that document because nobody ever reads that document, and it's many pages long. But basically, there was a hint in that little blurb there, follow it to the letter. Well, basically, if you look at the letters carefully, the capitalized letters spell a message, and those capitalized letters spell the following message. These are very noble words, but they're utterly irrelevant to your task today. What you need to be doing is following the instructions spoken in the tweets of EverCloser. So then you had to go to twitter.com/EverCloser. And when you did that, you got this line-by-line series of narratives that made it seem like something was being told to you. Line number one, you're doing quite well. Line number two, just be very careful. Continuing, you don't want to make a mistake at this point. Follow the instructions and you'll be fine. But don't go any further if you don't think you're a candidate. The results could be ... unpleasant. And this is where we started to learn things about some social networking sites. We had three dots after that. And then the words in brackets, think it over. We wanted to put three dots after that again, but you can't do that on Twitter. They won't let you say the same thing twice.
What?
You can't say the same thing. It said you already said that. You can't say that again. Maybe it's within a certain amount of time. I don't know. But we had to do two dots after that. Then think some more in brackets, and then one dot. And then after that, we said, now, if you're sure, ... proceed. Send an email to phase two. Use a different word this time. Hold on to your two words. They will matter. Await our instructions. And so, if you sent mail to phase two at 2600.com, guess what? You got another auto response saying, congratulations, you have successfully made it to the second phase of the operation. As long as you continue to follow instructions and complete the mental exams we administer along the way, your path to candidacy will proceed smoothly. Do not stray. Remember, you are being watched. Oh, yes, and be sure to hold on to this communication as well. You almost certainly will need it. Could the answer be at gmail.com? It can't hurt to explore. Now, a couple of notes here. For one thing, we did something very cruel at this stage. We told people it can't hurt to explore, but actually it could hurt very severely to explore. We basically told people to email phase one at 2600 and phase two at 2600. So few people took it upon themselves to email phase three at 2600.com. And if you did that, you got a response saying, congratulations. By thinking outside of the box and emailing this address before we even mentioned it, you have shown the ability to anticipate a situation before it develops. This is indeed a much sought-after skill, useful in a wide variety of applications, but not here. All we asked you to do was follow the instructions. By emailing us here, you have shown that you cannot do that and that you're the kind of person who will be a royal pain in the ass by acting like an individual all the time. Clearly, not what we want in a candidate. You have been eliminated. Yeah. Well, you know, it had to be done. And so many people did that, and they were really upset. I'm sorry about that. It was a cruel trick on our part, certainly. But had to be done.
That'll teach people to count.
But the other clue in that phase two message, could the answer be at gmail.com? Any theories as to what that might actually be? No? None?
A webmail provider.
That's what it is. But no, not specifically that. Hang on, I'm typing in a URL here. But Bernie, no theories?
I would have been lost at this point. But I have to hand it to you guys for putting this together. It's impressive.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you should mention lost, because all the references to candidates, of course, comes from that program. But we were just having a bit of fun with that whole thing.
The pun was intended.
It was. It really was. What we basically did was set up a Gmail account through our amazing skills. That was the account, could the answer be at gmail.com. So if you emailed, could the answer be at gmail.com, you got a response saying, well, aren't you clever? Actually, that's what the title of it was. That took a bit of intelligence to figure out this email address. Good for you. Now, if you could just tell TinyURL the last name of Mauritania's prime minister, the real fun can begin. And that's actually what I'm trying to type in right now. Now, while I'm doing that, of course, one of you tell us what the real last name of the prime minister of Mauritania is.
I have no idea what the first name even of the prime minister
of Mauritania. Well, we weren't asking for the first name. We only need the last name.
I thought you were the prime minister of Mauritania.
No, clearly not. Ex-prime minister, maybe, but you know, he's not even in Mauritania right now.
Okay, I have typed in. I've told TinyURL the last name of the prime minister, which of course is Moulay Ould Mohamed Lagdaf.
Of course.
So if you simply spell out Lagdaf to TinyURL, Laghdaf, well then you got transferred to YouTube. And what I'm going to try to do now, and I say try because this is the BAI computer here. I'm going to play you the YouTube video that shows up. Obviously, you can't see the video, but you can hear it. So let's take a listen.
What can the bus get an act of Saskia Smock with the Milch Lake of CF that
Yeah, okay, so that...
Did you just say that Paul was dead?
No, not in so many words. But if you were looking at YouTube and watching that, you saw archive footage of North Korea from when I went over there. It's basically a film of Kaesong, the city Kaesong, where I was basically leaning out of a bus, taking video. We played it backwards, of course. You could see the cops standing in the middle of the street. They have traffic cops there, male traffic cops. Pyongyang has female traffic cops. Kaesong has male traffic cops. And it was just basically distorted to make it look like an old black and white film. And the message played backwards was a voice synthesis, automated computerized voices, that basically said, welcome, your destiny is at last upon you. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. This is the wrong thing. Hang on. Yeah, this is not it. I don't think I have the text. I don't think I have the text of basically what we told people to do. Was basically go to Facebook and create an account if you didn't already have an account and apply for membership to a group known as Successful Candidates of the Next Hope. And people who did that basically were put through a verification system where we looked for the words in the email and we made sure that they didn't do things too fast and we made sure they never emailed phase three and that they went through all the steps properly. And then we sent them the message saying, welcome, your destiny is at last upon you. While you had to undergo a series of tests to confirm that you were a viable candidate, the truth is that you have always been a part of this group. Deep inside, you've known this for a long time. The others you will find here are the people that you have always been meant to join forces with. As a result, you will remain a part of this group for the rest of your days on this planet. The group transcends all other activities. This is now your primary purpose. Please converse and interact here as you would with any quote-unquote normal collection of individuals. Just remember that what is discussed here and what is discussed between candidates is never to be disclosed outside of the group. We don't have to tell you the consequences of working against the plan. Actually, you know what? I'm on shallow earth or deep water or whatever. I shouldn't be reading this because this is sort of internal right now. So basically...
Do we have the bleeping button ready to go?
It's too late for that. It really is. But basically, a number of people did pass muster. And now they are part of a group. They are part of the Successful Candidates of the Next Hope. The group is closed. No more people can be allowed in. And they're conversing. They're talking to each other. They're planning things out. And some changes are afoot. And this is how it happens, by being clever, by figuring out puzzles and winding up in the same place with the people you are always meant to work with. What do you think about that?
It
was kind of scary, I think. That's what we did. And... and that was April Fool's. How many people do you think made it? Any guesses?
Three.
I'm
guessing three.
I was thinking something like that, too. We had one person actually get it right around, I think, midnight of the first day. Got that very fast. Other people say they worked on it all day long at work. They didn't accomplish anything that day. They just basically were working on this puzzle. In the end, we had about 30 or so.
Wow.
So, yeah, I was very surprised, very amazed. We had to be careful that we didn't see any indication of people telling people the answers. But I think the 30 people that we vetted were qualified. And many thanks to them. Congratulations to them. Also, I want to thank Mark S. and David B. and Dotret for their work in putting this all together because it was a challenge. It sounded kind of simple. You know, I thought it would be fun to start with the QR code and take it from there and then sort of encompass all the social networking sites and do fun things with that. But it sort of got out of hand. And we started learning things that we didn't know about social networking sites. Like, for instance, when you join Facebook with a new user and you send more than, I think, 6 messages to people, your account gets suspended. We didn't know that at the time. So we almost got ourselves locked out of the group. So, yeah, that's the story there. And Voltaire is here. Did you really take a cab, Voltaire? Because that was the slowest cab in the world. Was it horse-drawn?
Yes, I took the cab to Wall Street.
Wall Street, New York.
Yes.
All right. Because you messaged me, must have been 45 minutes ago from the East Village.
No, I was parking ultimately in the East Village, but at that time I was in the West Village.
You told me you were parking in the East Village, but you were actually in the West Village when you sent the message.
I was going to park. Future tense.
This is why he's not a candidate, you see?
It's also why one should never park.
Well, yeah, well, with that logic, you'd be driving around permanently.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's continue. I should point out, did you have the cab driver listening to the show?
No.
Oh, why not? They always listen to the shows. All cab drivers listen to Off the Hook. We're telling Red Hack when he finally gets in here that the show is rescheduled to 6 p.m. next week. That way he'll show up on time when I'm not here and he engineers the show.
Okay.
So just keep that between you and the listeners. Don't let him know.
Then you should tell me it's at 5 p.m.
No, why would he be listening?
No, you should tell me that it's at 5 p.m. so that I can tell him.
Yeah, but you're not engineering. You can be late. It's okay. It doesn't.
No, we can't.
Well, no, it's people aren't going to be hurt by that. But Red Hack is late, then
our audience will be deprived of his wisdom.
Yeah, but our audience will be deprived of the opening theme and the archive if someone isn't here to do all that.
Hmm.
All right. Mercy me, we spent so much time on this that we spent a lot of time on it, too, beforehand. But speaking of North Korea, this is a fun little story that was being passed around. Details of a homegrown computer operating system developed by North Korea have emerged. Yes, at last. Information about Red Star, as it is known, was made public by a Russian blogger studying in North Korea who bought the program off the street. I don't know how you can buy anything off the street in North Korea. It doesn't really work that way. Further analysis by a government institute in neighboring South Korea said the operating system is aimed at monitoring user activity. However, very few North Koreans own a computer or have internet access. Almost none, actually. Web content is, not surprisingly, heavily censored. It's designed to control North Korea's own information security, a report by South Korea's Science and Technology Police Institute said. Due to a few applicable programs available, Red Star will not even be easily distributed in North Korea, it added. The Russian blogger, identified only as Mikhail, well, that shouldn't be too hard to track down, could be bought in Pyongyang for around $5. Yeah, the operating system represents the determination of North Korea to advance its own computer technology based on its Juche self-reliance philosophy. Yes, they injected that into the operating system as well. The Red Star operating system uses a popular Korean folk song as its startup music and numbers years using a calendar which starts counting from the birth of state founder Kim Il-sung, making 2010 the 99th year, which means next year is year 100, you know. If you guys want to go to North Korea, next year is going to be a blast because the 100th is basically the year 100. You couldn't go to anything in the year 100 for us, but you have the opportunity to go there. And literally everything in that country is renumbered by year based on the birth date of Kim Il-sung.
Is this operating system over there is year 100 compliant?
I hope so. You know, that's a good question. There might be a what do they call that? A Y...
Y1H?
Yeah, I suppose. A YH or Y1H bug. That's something to consider and to be worried about. But yeah, and you know, I don't know if you noticed, on the back of Time Out was a full-page ad for the folks who do the North Korean tours, the my friends over there that I met and hung out with and really do a great job. So yeah, North Korea, operating systems, tours, 100, it's pretty incredible.
We'd like to give those people a plug.
Do
we know the names of the people?
Koryo Tours.
Okay.
Yes, K-O-R-Y-O Tours. And yeah, a lot of fun. And in fact, I know a number of people, T-Profit, Hanukkah, Sasha, who have gone over there, not with me, but on their own. And we've all met the same people, and it's really, it's a fun thing to do. Of course, you are going to North Korea, so you have to keep that in mind. Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
Have you or any of us on the show seen this, or anyone else we know, seen this North Korean computer operating system? Or is there a place you can download it?
I have not seen it, and I would be... rather hesitant to give people links that might not be actually links to an operating system. Who knows what they could be links to. But if anybody we trust has a copy and is able to run it, we'd sure like to see it and see what happens to you maybe and your computer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I wonder how it compares to Nova, the Cuban distribution of Linux.
That's a good question. Did we ever get a copy of that?
You can download it from their website.
Uh-huh. Now, we went to Cuba,
yeah.
And you spent some time inside the computer lab.
Yeah. Nova had not been developed at that point yet.
Really? But what were they using?
Mostly Windows with some Linux for propaganda effect.
Propaganda effect. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because, right, they don't pay Microsoft for Windows, so it's as free as Linux is for them.
Mm-hmm. This story, Rob, you found, which is a story that just sort of makes me smack my head hard. Apparently, there's the Library of Congress, and this is not a joke. The Library of Congress has acquired the entire Twitter archive. In other words,
finally.
In other words, every public tweet ever since Twitter's inception in March of 2006 will be archived digitally at the Library of Congress. Now, Twitter processes more than 50 million tweets every day. The total must be somewhere in the billions. I mean, really, is this a priority? Is this something that the Library of Congress really should even be thinking about?
I don't understand why they shouldn't. First of all, it probably fits on like two hard drives at 140 characters each. I mean, and for better or worse, this is like people are using this to communicate. It's an important record.
When you say public tweets, when I say public tweets, does that mean my tweets?
Or are they public?
Well, how do you define public?
If your account is not locked, your tweets are public.
Really? Yes. Okay. What if I ban certain people? Can I do that? Yeah. What if I ban the Library of Congress?
Can't do that.
No? There's no robots.txt for Library of Congress? Wow. What if I've said things that are very, like, anti-Library of Congress, and now they know? Now it's going to be there.
It doesn't mean that there's a human at the Library of Congress who is individually reading each one.
How do you find old tweet stuff? If I want to see what I said a year ago, I mean,
it's a real problem.
Other than hitting more at the bottom and the thing keeps giving you the stupid whale every now and then, is this going to be better?
Actually, the Library of Congress thing does not solve this problem, but recently Google has, and it hasn't solved this problem for good, but it solved it for anybody that wants to use it for Google, because Twitter has a very – they're open about a lot of things, but their API doesn't let you search old things more than like 2 weeks old. But now you can do it through Google, but Google is still paying them basically, and it would be better if they had like a more open source API.
Well, how would I do it through Google? How would I
Google, I'm not sure. On the left-hand side, they have like an options and then an updates, and they just released an update to that feature like a day or two ago, and that's made it like go back until like 2006.
Interesting. Okay.
There are also ways to do it. I've been on Twitter for about a year now. Before which I was making fun of it pretty much on a daily basis.
And you've become a Twitter maniac in that time. If you don't mind my asking, how many tweets have you produced in that year?
I think around 2,700.
2,700?
Yes.
I don't know how many I've produced, but it's not anything near that amount.
We can find out.
You can find out. Oh, my God. The level of geekdom here is unbelievable. You're using your phone to find out how many tweets I've had in the last year. It's all right.
Well, I was getting curious about stuff I wrote early in my Twitter presence. So
your early Twitter years.
Yeah, my early Twitter years.
You can tell the difference. You can see Rob T. Firefly when he was a Twitter novice,
yes,
and now
my
Twitter
rose period of Twitter. But there are lots of apps out there that will let you back up your tweets and download a local copy to like a CSV file or an Excel spreadsheet or anything that you like.
Why?
Because I guess if you don't want to depend on, like, I'm usually really not one to depend on external systems to maintain any of my own data.
Uh-huh.
So, like, any external blogs and things like that, I tend to back them up and just want to hold on to a copy because you never know when they'll disappear.
You know, this is a great idea for a talk at Hope, for somebody to have their entire talk presented as a series of tweets. You know, like on the overhead projector, you don't have any diagrams or graphs or anything like that. It's all just tweets. And that's how you present the thing. You cannot deviate from the script. That's what I want to see. Speakers at Hope.net. Let's see who's got the guts.
How many do you think you've sent?
Oh, how many have I sent tweets in my entire life?
Yeah,
your whole life.
Well, I don't. How long have I been on? Can you tell me that at least?
Maybe. No.
You can't tell me that. You see, the one bit of information
it's,
I want.
I'm on my phone, all right?
Doesn't it say member since or something?
Yeah, but
like
not
that?
On my phone.
Not on your phone. Okay, I'm going to guess maybe. How many do you have, Rob?
2,700.
2,700. I'm going to guess maybe like 200 or 300.
325.
There you go. See, I know myself. Well, okay.
That means I'm winning at Twitter.
How about you, Mike? How many tweets have you had?
Just over 1,000.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Here's a letter from... Oh, yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I just want to say your story that you brought up about Library of Congress archiving Twitter. The Library of Congress website also says, quote, "So if you think a Library of Congress is just books, think of this. The Library of Congress has been collecting materials from the web since it began harvesting congressional and presidential campaign websites in 2000. Today we hold more than 167 terabytes of web-based information, including legal blogs, websites of candidates for national office, and websites of members of Congress. And it goes on. So they're archiving a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they can't seem to mind their own business.
Not that much. Well, you can split like.
Who's archiving my Facebook post? That's what I want to know.
No one.
Ah, yeah, that's a real problem.
They should partner with the Library of Congress.
I was going to say, archive.org, I think, has gone into the petabytes, so that they're a lot larger, actually.
Just with tweets or with everything? Okay,
yes.
Good. All right. Hopefully some important things are being archived. I mean, you know, I'd like to be able to find old news stories or things that are out of print. That would be kind of useful.
I'm just wondering what the Library of Congress is going to do with these tweets, because one thing about the Twitter's terms of service is that people retain the rights to their own posts.
Mm-hmm.
So what if some people have them licensed restrictively or licensed under Creative Commons or something like that? How will they be reused? Will it be in line with all these users' sort of wishes?
Interesting times ahead. Yes, Voltaire.
Well, I think that the Library of Congress will do what the Internet Archive also does, which is not release stuff to the public generally unless – I mean, they release a few things, but most of the stuff will be kept private. And the stuff that is released and that you can access, like if you go to them physically, is public domain, as is all government documents.
Bernie.
I was just saying, if anybody wants to get those questions answered, they can go to loc.gov to visit the Library of Congress's website.
Okay, let's take a look at some listener mail, because we've had a bunch of that come in, and we'll be taking phone calls, 212-209-2900. Please don't call to ask about the T-shirts, you know, they're all being sent. That's the answer that we always give. And Rob T. Firefly has designed them, they're really nice, but it is a bit early for the fundraiser that just ended. The one before that we are working on. One thing, if you have a Cory Doctorow book coming to you, we kind of messed this up. We didn't get him to sign them when he was here. He's coming back in May, he's going to sign them, and we're going to send those out in May. So that's the only thing that's really been delayed significantly as a result. Everything else we should be pretty much caught up to. Yes, Voltaire.
If you do want to talk about T-shirts, feel free to tweet about it, and maybe we'll one day when we're looking at the Library of Congress, we'll find it.
Yeah, go to the Library of Congress with your gripes about that. Okay, dear Off the Hook, I have been reading the mag for 5 years now. I've recently started listening to the Off the Hook podcast. Yeah, that's what we are now. We're a podcast. I like the program, the variety of topics discussed. You know, for those of you listening on the pod or whatever, we are also a radio show. We broadcast over the air from the Empire State Building in New York City to four different states, you know, at 99.5 FM. So it's more than just a podcast.
Yes, but we are also remain popular amongst groups of whales.
Yeah, it's true. And we're also on DVD. There are archives available. People can be listening to shows from 20 years ago. Anything's possible. Anyway, I like the program, the variety of topics discussed. The show elevates any common person willing to listen to a whole new level of awareness on how advancing technologies work and to look at everything from a different point of view.
The only problem with that is that our audience consists of uncommon people mostly.
That's true, but they become uncommon by listening to WBAI.
Huh.
Yeah. Hats off to you guys on the interview to the founder of WikiLeaks. It is amazing how many crimes and unjustified behavior goes unpunished because of lack of public information, which obviously not even the mainstream media has access to, or if they do, are many times not willing to put themselves in the line of fire because of sponsors or personal lack of character or many other reasons. Thanks, System Crash from Puerto Rico, for those kind words. Here's a letter from Mike. Not you, Mike. Different Mike. I have a question that's been nagging me recently for purely theoretical reasons. In the past, you folks on the show, as well as speakers at Hope, have talked about the ease of tracking mobile phones by authorities. You've mentioned that one has to take the battery out to prevent being tracked. However, is this still the case if the phone is in airplane mode? Should this not prevent any trackable transmissions? Can you answer, Mike, Bernie?
Yes, I actually emailed Mike back, and it was a very good question. You know, the airplane mode, if people aren't familiar with it, is a mode that a lot of smartphones have where you can tell it to not transmit so that you won't be subject to – not subject to interfere with the avionics. But a piece of malware, software, spyware, could be on your phone that would falsely report your phone is in airplane mode and still spy on you. So the only way to really be sure your phone is not spying on you at any particular moment is to remove its power source, which is just battery. So if you take the battery out, you can be sure that your phone is not spying on you at that moment.
Okay.
It could also
depends on how powerful it depends on how powerful your enemies are and how much you want to hide from them, if you need to do this or not.
All right, Rob.
This is what makes me miss the days when a phone was basically a box of three fancy transducers.
Uh-huh.
No malware, no infections.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I've yet to get a virus on my phone. I don't intend to.
Bugs could actually crawl into them.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true. Many a time I found when I was opening up a junction box, which, you know, I legitimately had to fix something the phone company couldn't fix, I found all kinds of insects in there. So how it works sometimes. Here's another letter. Dear Off the Hook crew, this is a rather interesting story, actually. About a year and a half ago, I wrote you out of frustration and desperation after learning of the rather underhanded practices being used by Quest and Verizon, the two big telcos in the Portland area, to effectively shut out of the local market the small ISP I work for and all the other small independent ISPs in the area. To briefly recap, Quest has been performing, quote, equipment upgrades, unquote, at their COs and neighborhood cans for their new higher-speed DSL products. These upgrades generate such intense interference to older DSL signals that 7 megabit a second customers can wind up reduced to merely 1.5 megabit a second, and 1.5 megabit a second customers are often unable to remain connected at all. Verizon has been pushing their Fios service, which only affects individual residences, but still removes any ability of the residents to choose an internet provider, as there is no option to go back. With your advice in hand from that last email exchange, I approached the IT manager at the time and urged him to put together some new company policies, such as providing form letters for customers who had been slammed or had their service degraded, among other things. I encouraged the phone support techs to inform customers of their rights and asked them to write their state and local representatives about such things, as well as the State Utilities Commission. I even inquired as to whether we could drum up enough support to file a class action suit on behalf of the aforementioned slammed and disrupted customers. It is with great sadness that I must report that all of these efforts were for naught. The IT manager, who has since cut and run, actively discouraged the creation of any such form letters or urging of customers to take action. As far as I know, not a single customer did so on their own. And perhaps most disappointingly, we have pulled all advertising funding for our DSL and dial-up products, with the accountant declaring access is dead. This is especially troubling given the recent court decision of Comcast versus the FCC, which more or less seems to have killed any ability the latter had to enforce so-called net neutrality, at least as far as cable internet is concerned. On a positive note, we do still have several thousand access customers and have pledged to uphold the principles of net neutrality as long as we can continue to do so. We've also been able to move the company in a slightly different direction, web hosting as opposed to just access, ensuring all of us can keep our jobs. Sadly, it's only a matter of time before we lose the rest of those DSL customers, be it through upgrades by the telcos, subsidized pricing that we can't possibly match, or some new legislation that makes it impossible for a small 8-person operation to continue providing internet access. The worst part is, most folks won't even realize they've lost the ability to choose an internet provider, and that is what I mourn, losing the freedom of choice. Thanks, Javier, for a most enlightening letter, and rather sad and true, I think. Voltaire?
I might be mistaken, but I think the FCC has the power to regulate, even after this decision, they still are able to regulate DSL. They're just not able to regulate cable or fiber optic connections.
Yeah, well, this is all related. When you make it, we've had the same issues with our DSL connection for years, and it's more a state issue than FCC issue when the local phone company is messing things up quite a bit. But yeah, the net neutrality that's a more of a national thing. And that's what the recent case was all about. It sort of gives Comcast more power. Yes, go ahead, Bernie.
I'm sure many of our listeners remember the days when you could choose from a long list of local internet service providers. It was really great. I mean, each service provider had its own sort of character and ways of doing things. And the freedom of choice for people has really diminished greatly. It's kind of sad. And I don't know if any of others of us have comments about that.
Well, I just remember the old days. Rob, you remember the old days, right?
Yeah, I miss the old days.
Yeah. we seem to be saying that a lot.
I remember my first proper internet service provider that wasn't out of a disc attached to a magazine, and it was a little operation on Long Island, and very nice people working there. And every so often we would I would call the support line for some reason, and after the problem was fixed, we'd end up just chatting about geeky stuff because there was a guy who was in town and a nice guy.
Yeah, good luck doing that with the major phone companies. We're going to try to take some phone calls now. 212-209-2900. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi, what's on your mind?
Okay. Yeah, I had a question. Let me turn my radio down.
Yes, please do.
Okay. I had a question about replacing, using satellite dish and taking the horn, taking the, I guess, the extender, the microphone, I'm not sure exactly what you call it.
Is it the LNB, the thing that sticks, that points to the satellite?
Exactly, yeah. All right. Taking that and replacing it with a Linksys router or some sort of...
No, I don't think that's what we're talking about. okay, I'm not a satellite expert. Does anybody here know anything about this? Bernie, maybe?
Yes, you can actually do that. You can use the parabolic reflector of a DirecTV or Dish Network or some other type of satellite dish. You can use that as a reflector for Wi-Fi. You have to make sure that the antenna is properly placed at the focal point. But other people have done this, and the only downside is those parabolas are very, very tricky, very specific. You have to get them pointed just right, but you can get a lot of gain and gain great distance with your Wi-Fi connection that way.
Okay.
And there's nowhere to really point it, so I would...
You could mount it on an old TV antenna rotor, turn it that way. And there are actually commercial satellite dish antenna pointers you can buy, too. That's a little more pricey. But you could rig something up if you're a good hardware hacker.
All right. Thanks thanks for that call, and let's see who else is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, the earthquake in China comes on the eve of a major concert in the Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing, April 17th. It's a worldwide TV, internet, major, hello?
Yeah, I'm just trying to make you louder because I don't think you're loud enough.
I had already been planning to gather.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to make you louder because you're not loud enough.
Yeah, I was saying that
Could you speak up, maybe?
That occurred in the past 24 hours comes on the eve of a major April 17th concert live from the Bird's Nest Stadium in Beijing.
Uh-huh.
And the original theme was going to be ecology and peace, but now you've had this tragic earthquake. I want to alert people who are interested in China to this event. And any comment?
No, I think you pretty much said it all.
Is he calling us from China?
I don't know where he's calling us. He's calling from a very loud place, but I got the word out about the concert. That's the important thing. I thought he was going to tell us to go back to China. Or no, it's a different guy? Same guy?
I don't know.
But much sympathy to the people who endured yet another earthquake. I don't know what's going on in this world. Yeah, good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Good evening, Emmanuel. This is Bobson from Bulgaria.
You called Off the Wall last night. Wow, you're calling both shows.
I did.
From Bulgaria.
The reason I'm calling today, well, actually, you were talking about Twitter for a while.
We were.
I was wondering if you heard about the French person who got into trouble last month.
Yes, we talked about that. We talked about he supposedly got access to Barack Obama's Twitter account or might have had access or something like that. And I think we concluded that it wasn't that big a deal, right?
When I first heard about it, I on some TV station with news, they said he got admin access to Twitter.
He got admin access, and he could basically, I guess, get access to any Twitter account because of apparently they just have a single password that gives you administrator access, which I think is a fascinating revelation. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Another thing I wanted to, you mentioned. You forgot to get Cory Doctorow to sign the books that you have to send out, something like that.
Yes, we basically, he came to the States and we somehow didn't get him to sign. I think we didn't know the exact number we needed at the time, so we didn't want him to sign too many or too few. And he lives in England, so shipping all the books over to England to have him sign them and shipping them all the way back would have been prohibitively expensive. Of course, what we could have done, we could have faked the signatures and told everybody that it was Cory Doctorow's signature, but we don't do things like that. We'd rather people get angry at us and hurl all kinds of invective saying that these books have taken months to get to us, what's wrong with you people, than do something untrustworthy like forge someone's signature. We could have gotten away with it, but we didn't. He's going to be in the States in May, and we'll have them signed then, and then they'll be sent out shortly afterwards.
Well, that's what I wanted to tell you about. Do you have his phone number in England?
Yeah, we'll broadcast that over the air a little bit later on. No, I don't. I don't. I don't have his phone number. Absolutely not.
Oh, you don't?
No, no.
Well,
I don't use the phone anyway. I never have. I don't like the phone. Go ahead, Rob.
Cory Doctorow is an avid blogger, so I'm sure if you go to his website and go to his blog, you can contact him that way if you wish to contact Cory Doctorow directly.
Yes, listen, we're going to move on. I do hope we get to meet up at some point, because your country borders on Serbia, and I'll be passing through, and we can at least make the train honk or something as we go by.
Okay.
All right.
Have fun.
All right. And, yeah, I hope to hear from a bunch of people over there at any of the former Yugoslav republics, oth@2600.com. Give us an email, a shout of some sort. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, go to Cuba where you belong, you bunch of...
All right, I think that's that's a different guy, isn't it? Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on a story I just discovered that came out late yesterday, Tuesday, about Yahoo and Google and the Electronic Frontier Foundation, among others, challenging a government request for emails to be turned over to them that are under 180 days old without a Fourth Amendment.
I did see this earlier today that that EFF was supporting Yahoo fighting this. Yahoo doesn't want to have to turn this over. I don't know much more than that. Would you like to fill us in?
Well, I don't know too much. I came across it in the online version in Wired. The government's position is that the Fourth Amendment does not protect those emails. And let's see. Of course, the issue is whether they can access them without probable cause. And the exact nature of the messengers was not even revealed, as far as I can tell right now. I guess this is going to unfold a little more before it goes. But for the first time, we have Yahoo and Google actually on the same side, which is refreshing.
I'm sure they've been on the same side before, but it's good to see sometimes everyone making the right decision here, I think. Thanks for that. 212-209-2900. See if we can squeeze in a couple more. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Didn't I tell you to go to Cuba, you commie?
Yeah, but we did. We went to Cuba, and we came back. You didn't say we couldn't come back. Right? Did we do something wrong?
Apparently. All right. He's very angry.
Well, he did seem a little perturbed, didn't he? Well, we went to Cuba. You don't have to keep asking us to go to Cuba or demanding that we go to Cuba, because we did that already. Yes, Voltaire.
Not all of us have gone to Cuba, I think.
Well, you know, whose fault is that?
I think we need a sponsor, like that caller.
Well, yeah, you know, as journalists, we can go over there anytime we want. I'll go again. I don't mind. And I have a European passport now, so I can go anytime I want anyway. Yes, I can. I will.
The tourism board there, I think, is getting really aggressive.
Oh, you think that's where he's calling from? Oh, maybe.
Expensive call us from Cuba just to shout at us.
One more call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello. I wonder if that gentleman had ever been to Cuba himself.
You know, he should go. He really should. He should check it out. I think he'd be amazed. I think he'd be delighted by the many things that they have over there.
Let me ask you guys the most general question I could ask you guys, which is, suppose someone's pretty ignorant when it comes to computers and the internet and so on, you know, just sends your basic emails, has a Facebook account, that kind of thing. Is there a book, is there a single piece of literature that a person could get their hands on that would help them start on the road towards being more computer literate, more computer savvy, and so on?
Well, there are a million books that will teach you things about computers. Just go to any bookstore and look for Dummy's Guide to Various Things. Of course, I'm going to recommend The Best of 2600 if you want to get into the hacker world and see what the spirit is all about. I think there's a treasure trove of information out there. Just search on Amazon, go to a bookstore. You can find all kinds of interesting things there, but that's going to have to be the last word. I do want to get people to submit talks. We're running out of time. Running out of time for people to submit talks to the Hope Conference, which is coming up in July of this year. Go to www.hope.net for all the information. Email speakers@hope.net if you want to register a talk. Volunteers@hope.net if you want to volunteer and help out in various ways. Anything else? Any other email addresses we should give out?
Probably, but they can go on the website, hope.net, and see all about it.
It's all there. Voltaire and then Rob, and then we're out of here.
If you do want to sponsor us to go to Cuba, you can email OTA@2600 with your PayPal details.
Yeah, please. We'll take the money right out. Yes.
Also, if you're interested in Hope, get involved. Talk.hope.net is our forum.
Yes. Very much for there to be more activity there. You know, we're going to try to get more involved ourselves, but talk.hope.net, excellent way to ask questions and get the answers right away. All right, I'm off to former Yugoslavia. I'll speak to you from somewhere over there next week, and we'll be back at that point, too. OTH@2600.com. Good night.
You know, I'm looking everywhere, trying to find my mom. She's sitting in her chair, shopping everywhere.com. I said, hey, mom, get off the computer. Come and look, I just got cuter. Hey, mom, get off the computer now. Every time I look for my dad, he's sitting at the screen. He's staring like a zombie in a movie I hope I never see. I said, hey, Dad, get off the computer. Let's play some ball or fix my scooter. Hey, Dad, get off the computer now. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Got a little twitchy lip going here.
In the middle of the night, not a creature stirring in my house. But sometimes I hear the clicking of a little mouse. I said, hey, mom and dad, get off the computer.
There's a guy at the door
from Roto-Rooter. Everybody get off the computer now. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That was hot. I love that song. I don't know why. Just had a great beat to it. Into it. This is a beat that Cat would like. You think so? Maybe. Ah, what are we doing here? Oh, that's right. We're at WBAI, New York 99.5 FM in stereo. Also on the web at WBAI.org. Hey, you know what? Here's a good website to go to. PCRadioShow.org. But right now, it's 8 o'clock. April 14th, 2010. And it's Wednesday. And what's special about that is it's time for the Personal Computer Show.
Well, good evening, Stevie DB, and good evening to all the rest of you. This is Joe King, and in the studio with me tonight, my co-host Hank Key, our webmaster Michael Horowitz, and of course, we have to remember, behind the console, the magic of Stevie DB.
That was a pretty funny song.
I thought it was
cool.
I thought
it was pretty cute. Yeah,
that
was.
We have to thank 2600 for letting us listen to their music. Emmanuel puts in some really great cuts, really good.
Maybe
cuts.
He'll forget it in
this
CD player.
This is the computer show. It's the Personal Computer Show on WBAI 99.5 in New York, and I have no doubt that you have some computer things to talk about.
Well, of course, yesterday was Tuesday, and that is known as Patch Tuesday because it's the first Tuesday. And the big one is from Adobe, and Adobe has fixes for the Reader and Acrobat. And, well, let me talk about the
Are you telling me that Adobe sends out a patch every Tuesday?
No. It's once a quarter. That's what makes it such a big deal. In other words, if there's a problem, they wait for the quarter. That's one of the things. The other thing is that they have automatic updates now. Now, I haven't...
This is brand new. This is something they just started yesterday.
And yeah. We don't know anything about it.
Right. Well, I do know that I don't trust any new software, period.
Well, I did know that I had a pop-up saying that there was an update yesterday, and I said, I want to update it later, but I tried to exit out. I can't. I just had to go
Well, of course, you don't know where that pop-up came from.
Well, that was why I did indeed cancel that pop-up, and I did manually go out to the...
From the taskbar.
From the taskbar, and I did manually go out to the Adobe site and found that I couldn't get into the Adobe site.
Well, what was the pop-up about an update to Flash or an update to Reader?
No, Reader. Actually, the thing is, it looks at what you have, and all I have was the Reader. I don't have Acrobat installed on this machine. And it turns out that it's both on Reader and Acrobat, and they have patches not only for Windows, all versions of Windows, all versions of Macintosh, and Unix.
But
it's all three platforms.
Michael, answering your question, I got a pop-up also for Flash, which made me immediately suspicious.
Oh, yeah, never trust that. I got that yesterday on a machine after I had removed Flash, rebooted the machine. As soon as it started up, I got the note, oh, your Flash is out of date. So
made you
question. How much I trust Adobe.
There is a really malicious piece of software out there that does just that, but it's not from Adobe. Right. It's from the bad guys.
Well, I think it has to be significant because just to give you an idea, the size of the patches, I think it's almost like a program replacement. For instance, if you're the size for Acrobat for the Macintosh is 63.7 megabytes.
That's a pretty good size patch.
That's big. For Windows, it's 88.5.
Well, that's why a lot of people don't like the Adobe Reader and prefer alternate programs.
Because well, I've been
it's just
using
such
Foxit.
A big, huge thing. Yeah, I'm a big Foxit fan, too.
But the thing is that one of the patches is the same problem that Foxit has.
Well, this wasn't a problem. This is a feature of the PDF file system that you can apparently cause other programs to be invoked when you open a PDF file. And needless to say, that's a big security danger, and somebody found a flaw in the way that handled, and both Adobe and Foxit issued fixes for it. Adobe's first fix, as of last week, was that there was an option within Adobe that you could say, never do that, never open another file. Foxit did not have such an option, but they did add a warning to it. Unfortunately, someone who doesn't understand sees that warning, they won't know what it means.
Before we go on from there, Michael, because I want to head off the thousands of emails I'm going to get any minute now. How do I get a copy of Foxit?
I believe it's foxitsoftware.com, and they have a number of commercial products, but what we are talking about is the free PDF reader.
Well, actually, you just go to Google and you say F-O-X-I-T, free, space free, and it'll take you right there.
Good. Now you don't have to write to me and ask.
The other thing is that yesterday was also the first Tuesday, and each month Microsoft will have patches. Of course, last week they had special patches, which was unusual because they said it was an emergency. This one they have a whole group of patches. It not only does affect all different versions of Windows, it also affects Office. And some of these are not just Windows itself, you know that, because they provide patches for Office on the Macintosh, too.
Yes, I understand that, Hank, but I'm a little bit puzzled. Why did I get patches for Microsoft Publisher, Office Publisher, 2002 on one machine, 2003 on another machine, and 2007 on a third machine, when I don't have Publisher installed?
You know what? I made a bet that you probably just did a default install on Office, and that installs everything.
It might have, but I then went to the Start menu, Programs, All Programs, and looked at the list, and I didn't have Publisher in any of those three machines on the list.
Yeah, I have frequently seen that too.
Why is that?
On a computer with one version of Office, you will see patches for two separate versions of Office listed. I have no idea why that is.
Okay, but that just says to me, I don't trust it.
Well, since we've talked
about... It's not an impressive feature, yeah.
Since we've been talking about malware, Michael, you were telling us just before the show about a malware that, if you Google a particular...
Oh, this was
subject,
nasty. Michael,
yeah, this was particularly nasty. Everyone, even if you're not a sports fan or a golf fan, everyone knows that there was, a few days ago, Tiger Woods, there was a new Tiger Woods commercial in black and white where his dead father is talking to him. This was, I'm sure, water cooler talk everywhere for a couple days. Very hot topic. What happened was a security company wrote a blog, and I verified it seemed to be true, that if you did a Google search, if you were one of the persons who heard about this commercial but hadn't seen it, do a Google search for the words Tiger Woods commercial. This security company said that 6 of the top 7 Google search results were malware-infested web pages. 6 of the top 7.
This points out a couple of things. A, you can't trust that you, just because it shows up in Google, it's legit. You can't trust that.
Yes.
The second thing is you can't assume that in order to get infected or infested or whatever you want to call it, you have to take some action. You can just go to the site and not do a darn thing.
Unless you install the patches that Hank was just talking about.
Right.
Yes, you just go look at a web page and get infected with a virus.
Now, Michael, as you know, there is also a way where when they show you all these pages that you can go to, that you can actually, some of them will display a symbol, whether it's green or red.
Well, all right, Google does not do that. Now, first of all, Google tries to keep bad websites out of their search results. It's just an impossible task. I was just amazed at how good the bad guys are at gaming Google so that of the top seven results were malware infested. Whatever Google's algorithm is for what the most relevant page is, obviously the bad guys know it as well as Google does. But what you're talking about, Hank, is extra add-on software, which I am a huge fan of. I use it on all my computers. I install it on all the clients' computers.
But it's not 100%.
No, nothing is ever going to be 100%. But it is better than just Google alone, and it also applies to Bing and Yahoo search results. It's free software called WOT Web of Trust, and the website is mywot.com. And this is a plugin which is available for a web browser plugin available for Firefox, for Internet Explorer, and very recently they came out with a Chrome version. I've installed it on Firefox and IE many, many times, and it flags each Google search result. Very simple and obvious. If there's a green circle, it means WOT thinks it's a safe site. If there's a red circle, it means they think it's bad. If it's yellow, they're not 100% sure. And if it's gray, it means they have no idea.
And
it's a great early warning system.
And what does this cost?
It's free. It's a free system.
So why isn't everybody using it?
I think everyone should use it.
So how do they get it?
mywot.com.
Okay.
Web of Trust.
I use it, and I find that it's very useful, except that when I first put it on my wife's machine, she says, what do these little symbols mean? You know, the green and the red.
Green circles. They show up in Gmail. They show up if you're using Yahoo Mail. Every link in Yahoo Mail has a little circle next to it. Okay, it takes a little getting used to. I think it's a great thing.
Does it slow up the system?
Probably, but not noticeably.
I'll tell you, it slows up the system a lot less than having to clean out all the malware.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Do you use it, Joe?
I do. There's also a commercial version I'm not going to get into right now, but I reviewed that version about 3 years ago, and I've kept that one up to date pretty much. But this is as good, and it's free.
Well, the next thing I want to talk about is something that was some of the mainstream media, and I use the term mainstream media as saying they should know better. They were talking about a new technology at least it's a feature that Apple has announced. And on the iPhone, it'll be available sometime this summer, and on the iPad, it'll be available in the fall. It's called multitasking. Why don't we explain what multitasking is?
Well, first of all, the multitasking is now being built into the Apple iPhone OS 4.0. 4.0. And I think it's out there right now for testing. And I think that it was absolutely brilliant of...
Wait, what is it, first of all?
I think it was absolutely brilliant of Apple to come out with multitasking, which enables you to run more than one program at the same time off the same operating system. And I think it's a great innovation.
Something Windows 3.1 could do.
Are you...
when was Windows 3.1 available? In
1974?
It's actually more basic than that, Joe. It's really the ability to say, let's say on the iPhone, okay, you are browsing, and then you will hear the phone ring. You don't have to exit out of the browser. You can just suspend that and go answer the phone, whereas currently you have to exit out of the browser to get to the phone.
You know, I have been using not an iPhone. I'd like to get one, which I shall someday. But right now I've been using a BlackBerry. And one of the apps on the BlackBerry that I've been using is a thing called Pandora, which is a jukebox in essence. And I'll be walking down the street listening to some music, and my phone will ring. Phone's in the pocket, earphones on my ear, listening to the music. Suddenly, the phone rings, the music stops, And I know if at that point I say hello, I'm on the telephone.